Wall Street right now, stocks barely changed. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News Radio.
Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this Wednesday, Worldview Wednesday edition of the Knowing the Truth radio program. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and we're going to talk about some pretty interesting subjects today. To start with, at the top of the program, we're going to talk with Emily Bells from World Magazine, and we're going to talk with Emily about an article that she's recently written. In fact, as I look out on the Web Extra portion of the World Magazine website. By the way, that's www.worldmag.com. Her article is entitled Liberal Losses, and she talks about a couple of fairly significant rulings that have just come down from the Supreme Court, one dealing with a lawsuit that workers brought against Walmart, of course, the retail giant Walmart, and then also there was one related to climate change as well, and so we'll look at both of those issues. In between the two interviews that I'm doing today, I'm going to do a brief interview as well with a local business here. Digger's Barbecue is back. I don't know if you noticed, I think they moved. They were here in Greenville, and they had actually launched out a little bit. We're doing a little bit with trying to start up a retail chain of Digger's Barbecues, very popular here in the Greenville area. Well, they're back, and they're located now right down the street from us here on Wade Hampton Boulevard. And I wanted to speak with Nick Ruiz, who is one of the owners there. I think him and his brother are actually the owners of Digger's. But Nick also has a book out about business and about the struggles that he went through when he was trying to franchise this little barbecue business that they have. And so I want to talk to him briefly in between the two interviews today. So we'll do that at the bottom of the hour. And then finally, on the program today, we'll be speaking with the American Enterprise Institute, and even more specifically with Daniel Lotzenheiser. And we're going to be speaking with him about a poll that was just recently done and a survey that was conducted. And that survey is titled as Contested Curriculum, How Teachers and Citizens View Civic Education, how they view them differently, I should say, there. And we're going to talk to him about what this survey showed and just exactly what is the different perspectives of the American citizen in general, and then what they found out about the way the priorities that the American teacher, the average American teacher, is thinking as well. It's a pretty interesting study, so we'll talk about that. Let's go first to Emily Bells. Emily, I think, is in Washington, D.C. today. I think we caught her going in and out of various meetings there in Washington. Emily, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio program. Is that true? Did we catch you going back in and out of some meetings there in Washington?
That's right. I'm on the Hill, and there are a lot of votes going on today, so it's busy up here.
Is there quite a bit of dialogue taking place or comments being made? I think the president is coming on tonight at 8 o'clock to talk about Afghanistan, so I imagine that there's quite a bit of some rumblings up there at the Capitol about that.
Yeah, and they're talking about Libya, too. The Republicans just introduced two resolutions that are challenging the president's power to continue in Libya without consulting Congress. So that's kind of the topic of the day.
Yeah, I just heard on the way coming in one of the news items that Italy, of course, part of making up part of the NATO forces that are currently bombing different sites in Libya, that they want out, that they don't really see an end game here, and they're not quite sure what we're doing, and they don't think it's working. They seem to be at a stalemate. The president originally said that this would only be days, weeks at the most, I guess, and now it's been months. And so there's not only a little bit of interest in growing tired here in the United States of what's going on and wanting more accountability on this, but I think even with some of our NATO partners as well.
Yeah, I think if you've lost Republican support in Washington, then it's fair to say that the partnership overseas is going to be hard to hold together on this war.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to talk to you about a war, if I could put it this way, a little bit closer to home. The war in the Supreme Court that just took place, of course, I think it was a large group of women that had worked at Walmart were seeking to do a class action suit against Walmart for hiring practices. I think whether or not they were held back from promotions, if I remember this correctly. And this went all the way up to the Supreme Court. Am I right in assuming that what the Supreme Court voted on was whether or not they could actually form a class action suit, or whether these allegations against Walmart had to be taken separately, if you will?
Yeah, you're exactly right. The Supreme Court unanimously said that they were too big of a group and too diverse of a group to sue as a class. And the court was a little more divided on the question of whether they could talk about actual discrimination that was going on against these women at Walmart.
Hmm. So if they would have voted for this, how would this have been a victory for liberals? You entitled your article that I referred to at the top of the broadcast as Liberal Losses. What's the liberal element in the idea of these women going against Walmart?
Well, a lot of unions and traditionally liberal groups like the American Civil Liberties Union had joined with the women who sued Walmart. And so it was seen sort of as a clash between, you know, the working class and this big corporation. And the decision that came out unanimously in favor of Walmart really sets the stage for future lawsuits. It's going to make it a lot harder for workers to sue as a class against a corporation. So I think business groups and those types are pretty happy with what happened.
Hmm. You make mention in your article that the liberal blog, the Huffington Post, titled the outcome of the Supreme Court's decision as "Women, You're on Your Own." And so they obviously did see it as a major loss. And you also mentioned that the American Civil Liberties Union was involved in this as well. They seem to have a propensity to go after what they consider to be big business, even though Walmart it's a little bit of an oxymoron here, I think, for them, in the idea that Walmart, although it's a big business, it's also providing low pricing for people as well. Was that any part of the built into the equation of the animosity that was shown towards, you know, the big retail giant like this?
Yeah, I think there was that. There's kind of a general cultural animosity towards Walmart for the reasons that you stated. And Justice Scalia wrote the opinion for the court, and he said that, you know, we can't talk about Walmart as just this big giant that's ordering this policy against women or something. He said there's no corporate policy that's against these women. The issue is at local levels. So you have to look at stores on an individual basis, he said. And So those women are individually going to have to file lawsuits if they think they've been discriminated against. But Walmart's kind of, the way it's structured, it's very locally focused. So these managers are doing these things on a local level.
What was the major claim by the group that was trying to form the class action suit? I know it deals with women and something dealing with hiring practices or promotions, but specifically, what were they saying that Walmart was doing?
Yeah, what you referred to there is systematically giving women lower pay and not promoting them. So, and there actually are some pretty stark statistics on that, that women make up 70% of the workforce but earn, 30% less than the men. But, there's a lot of different explanations for that, so it's hard to draw a conclusion about that, or at least it was hard for the justices to draw a conclusion. But the overall claim is that women are systematically treated as worse than men in terms of pay and promotions.
And this was very significant in the sense that had the Supreme Court agreed to allow this to form as a class action lawsuit or settlement, it would have been actually the largest settlement in history, right? Potentially affecting, as you list in your article, 1.6 million women with the potential of billions of dollars in damages.
Yeah, there were huge stakes here, and I thought Walmart's statement after the case was kind of an understatement. They said they were pleased with the outcome, and I think they're a little more than pleased, probably.
Yeah, a tremendous amount of savings there, I'm sure. The High Court, in throwing out this particular suit, they didn't really decide whether the women had been discriminated against. They basically just said that there was, I think the actual word or phrase that was used was that there wasn't some glue that held together the allegations that were made. In other words, they couldn't really connect the dots between this many grievances to say, okay, there is a pattern here that is easily discernible within Walmart of discriminating against women. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, and these women are going to, if they do have cases, they might still be getting settlements from Walmart individually. So they can bring their lawsuits individually to high court, but that makes it a lot harder for them to win damages because obviously it's expensive to take on a business like Walmart on an individual level.
Mm-hmm. Now, does anybody, I guess they do, but do they actually sue Walmart as individuals? Because you would think that, Walmart, of course, would be able to provide the best legal minds, on their side of the table. Are women looking at this, the other side looking at this as a David and Goliath type scenario, that these women basically stand no chance because they're not going to be able to afford any sort of an individual lawsuit against a corporation of this size?
Yeah, I think that is a factor and will play in Walmart's favor, but there are a lot of organizations that have really top lawyers that will take on cases like this. Legal organizations that will provide representation for women in situations like this. So even though it's largely a win for Walmart, they still might have some significant legal fights ahead of them.
I see that a lady by the name of Betty Dukes, the Walmart employee representing the class in court, told Forbes that the Supreme Court has ruled against all women of a poor background in this country. It seems that, these are headline-grabbing statements about Walmart, but it appears when we drill down a little bit further into the decision that this is just not necessarily the case. That really hasn't been proven. It was just that this case couldn't go forward because there were so many different grievances that couldn't be pulled into one. Is that a fair way of looking at it?
I think it is, and what makes that point go home, I think, is that this was a unanimous decision about the class. So the all nine justices said, you know, this large of a group of people cannot sue together under this law. So I think that shows that it's not an ideologically divisive decision. And the liberal justices did file a separate opinion and said, you know, we're sure that there's potentially discrimination going on, but we're not talking about that in this case. Mm-hmm. So that, I think that just illustrates that you can't really parse this in a partisan way at this level.
Once it's shot down by the Supreme Court, can they then go back and say, okay, well, we need to do more work. We need to, out of this 1.3 million women that you talked about, maybe 500 of them have, or I'm sorry, 500,000 of them or so have issues that are very similar. Can they then pool them together into a more cohesive group and then once again go back and say, well, now we're going to sue Walmart, have a class action lawsuit based upon the issues that affected just this particular group of the women?
I think they could do that. It's a pretty lengthy process to get, you know, it's going to go through the courts again and go all the way up to the Supreme Court, and that takes years and years.
Mm-hmm.
So it would take a lot of focused energy if they decide they want to try this again.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about the second ruling that you list in your article as well. This one dealt with the idea of carbon emissions. Explain to the listening audience what this ruling was about and why should the people listening to this, why should they care about this issue?
Well, it affects your utility company. So several states sued some of the country's largest utility companies, trying to force them to put a cap on their carbon emissions, which essentially would require them to build new plants and do very expensive investment in capping their carbon emissions. So the Supreme Court said that states weren't allowed to do that and that was the job of the federal government under the Environmental Protection Agency. So essentially for now, the utilities and the major utilities are off the hook. They can go on their merry way until the EPA steps in and tells them that they need to cut their carbon emissions.
Mm. It seems that the EPA seems to be the tool of choice right now for this administration. If they couldn't pass the legislation about climate control and implementing all of those new restrictions, they seem to be using the EPA then as the big stick to go after companies like this from a different angle. Do you see it that way as well?
Yeah, and I think the Supreme Court sees it that way too. This is an interesting ruling because it's in favor of the utility companies, but it's also encouraging the EPA to issue more regulations.
Mm.
So the EPA so far hasn't issued carbon emissions regulations for existing utility plants, but they do have new rules for new utility plants, new power plants.
Mm.
I think in the next few years we'll see more rules come out for existing plants as they try to phase those new rules in.
Mm. Yeah, I hate to see these things go all the way to the Supreme Court and then for the EPA to have even more power. Obviously, we want less pollution. There's no doubt about that, and we're not pro-pollution, but we're also not pro, we have no good data telling us, of course, that carbon emissions is causing global warming. We don't have any firm evidence that there is an alarming amount of global warming taking place. And so I think that the jury is still out on this whole global warming issue. And yet the government seems to be moving forward with trying to force this upon these utility companies, which in the end, as you were saying, it's probably going to make our utilities more expensive. And so the people that are going to pay for it again are us, the American people, who are actually have to pay the bill in order for these types of rulings that they have. So I think you're right in the beginning there where you're saying how it's going to affect us. It's going to affect us because this is your utility company. It's going to have a major effect on you as you crank up that air conditioning during these hot days of summer for the people here in the South anyways. Emily, thank you very much for taking time out of running around up on Capitol Hill there from meeting to meeting, staying up to date on what's taking place. Thank you for taking time out to visit with us on the program today. We really appreciate it.
Good to be with you.
Okay, we'll see you. That was Emily Bells from World Magazine, and you can read her column. It's out on worldmag.com. It's under the Web Extra segment of the website, and the title of the column was called Liberal Losses: Rulings Reject a Climate Change Lawsuit and Workers Suit Against Walmart. And you can read that and many, many other stories out there at worldmag.com. This is their book edition, Book of the Year edition, and so it's just chock full with some really helpful information. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
Republican Party, Democrat Party, and Tea Party. Politics can be confusing. There are social conservatives and economic conservatives, and they don't always see eye to eye. I don't share that disconnect. I believe the culture and economy go hand in hand, and that the battle is really between truth, which leads to freedom, and lies that lead to bondage. I'm Josh Kimball, host of Spiritual Sense. Join me weekday mornings from 6:30 to 7 as we discuss consistent conservatism here on Christian Talk 660 AM, 92.9 FM, and visit me online at joshkimball.com.
It's great pizza for a great price. So pack up the family and head over to Stevie B's near Walmart on Woodruff Road in Greenville. At Stevie B's, you'll find friendly faces and at least a dozen pizzas out at all times. Or you can order a pizza. They'll make it fresh just for you at no extra cost. So visit Stevie B's today.
Hi, this is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and I want to take the time to thank John, Ruth, Carlos, and the good folks over there at Stevie B's Pizza for their support of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
The Bible says a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger.
You're such a liar, Jim.
You are a liar and sick and alcoholic.
So why do we see so much trumped up, gratuitous drama on reality TV and in our own lives? One thing's certain, the Bible is clear about what we as Christians should do with anger, even our so-called justifiable anger.
Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you, along with all malice. Be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another as God in Christ forgave you.
So before you let loose, remember what Jesus said.
Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Let us love one another, for love is from God, and whoever loves has been born of God and knows God.
Go to BillyGraham.org and click on Spiritual Growth. That's BillyGraham.org.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome back into the second half of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. We just spoke a few moments ago with Emily Bells, who's right now up on Capitol Hill, involved in a number of meetings that are taking place up there, and wanted to get her input on a number of important issues. Talked a little bit about carbon emissions and also about a ruling that just came out from the Supreme Court related to Walmart, and that was interesting. And like I said, you can read the rest of Emily's report and article out there on worldmag.com. That's www.worldmag.com. Just go out there. Her article was under the Web Extra section, and so you can go there in order to find out more. I wanted to, we're going to be going to another interview here in just a moment with the American Enterprise Institute about a study that they did just recently, and we're going to be talking about the subject of contested curriculum, how teachers and citizens view civic education. There's quite a discrepancy between those two groups as to how they see these things, and we're going to be joined by Daniel Lutzenheiser here in just a few moments, and we'll go to that in just a minute. But before we do, I wanted to take a couple moments to introduce you to a reintroduce you, maybe I should say it that way, to Digger's Barbecue and Digger's Barbecue Express, which is right here in Greenville. They're located right up at 3217 Wade Hampton. It's just about maybe a mile or so up Wade Hampton from where our studio is here on Wade Hampton Boulevard. And they're just, they have wonderful food up there. I've had their sandwiches, their barbecue sandwiches. They're just delicious. They've got baked beans and coleslaw. I'm going to make everybody in the listening audience hungry. But here's the thing. They've got a couple of things there that I didn't see at any other barbecue place like this. Not only is their barbecue really good, but secondly, I noticed that they have a $5 lunch special going on right now. So it's $5, and the $5 for the plate includes your tax and your tea. And so you get the drink along with it, so you get the plate with the barbecue and such, and then you get the tea and it includes your tax. So for just a $5 bill, you can get yourself a really good regular Digger's Barbecue sandwich. If you haven't had Digger's Barbecue before, you need to go up there and check this out. It's really, really good. The owners up there are Nick and his brother, Nick Ruiz and his brother. And I found out in talking with Nick up there that he also has a book out. So let me welcome Nick, first of all, to the Knowing the Truth radio program today, and then have him tell us a little bit about Digger's, and then I want to also know a little bit about the book that Nick has out as well. Nick, welcome to the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate it.
Nick, why don't you tell the Digger's story here really quick? I think people remember Digger's from a while back, but you're in a new location up here on Wade Hampton, so just tell us what's going on with Digger's these days.
Well, basically, you know, we're reintroducing ourselves to the upstate of Greenville County. You know, we really have a good, strong customer base out there that we did catering for, and every time we did catering, people wanted us to be back in the restaurant, so we decided to open up a restaurant, a small little express location here in Taylor's. So that's basically where we're at right now.
And the so full-service buffet catering, somebody's having a birthday party or something dealing with a wedding or anything like that, you guys can handle that whole thing. You can deliver the buffet and do it at a reasonable price.
We do any size caterings. We've done anything as small as 20 people to thousands. We've done the fly-in for Greenville, for all of South Carolina, where the airlines come together. We've done that. We've done some major things for Harkness International. We've done big caterings and small caterings, weddings, birthdays, even corporate functions, little meetings, anything that you need and can do on the catering side. And on the in-store side, again, like you saw, we have great prices. Everything on our menu is tax included. We're the only, actually probably only establishment in food, period, that does that tax included menu.
Oh, that's excellent. You know, you always see the price advertised and then you look at it later and, you know, by the time you build in the drink and the tax and everything, it's not quite the deal that you thought it was. So I like the idea that you put it together, especially, you know, in this economy, families are looking for a good place to go out to eat. You've got a kids' menu there as well that includes a PB&J plate. You always got to have that chicken plate, chicken fingers, the whole nine yards. And if the adult is paying, then the child's portion there, I think, is only $2. Is that correct?
Correct. It's $2 and includes fries and a drink also.
Oh, that's excellent.
They get a full meal for $2 for the kids.
That's excellent. Again, located right up there at 3217 Wade Hampton Boulevard. Nick, I also wanted to ask you, while I got you on the line here, about this book that you have written. Let me give people the website for the book to start, just so that as we get going in the conversation here, I don't want to forget to do that. But the site is www.moneyandthe9steps.com. www.thefamilyandhead.com. And let me tell the listening audience, it's all one word except for 9 is the actual number 9, not spelled out. And so it's moneyandthe9steps.com, and you can go out there. Tell how this book is related to Diggers.
Well, basically, the story is about me starting the business Diggers, buying it out, having some success, and starting to franchise. And then what happened was we had some bad partnerships, some things just didn't go the way I personally wanted them to go. I'm a man of excellence, and I wanted it to be an excellent business where we all did the same thing. And it just wasn't going the way I wanted it and perceived it to happen. So ended up losing a lot. You know, had to buy the rights back, go to court, and had a terrible financial storm, basically, happened to me. And, you know, lost houses, cars, everything. Mm. And basically the book's about me going through those struggles, the emotional side of the financial burdens that a lot of people are going through today, because that's the area that most people don't realize that. Finances affect your not only your personal life, but your emotional side, too. So we deal with both of those aspects in the book and how to dig your way out of that hole that most people can get in situations like that.
Mm, yeah, the little tag for the book here says this: Nick Ruiz is an entrepreneur, motivator, and a financial and business mentor. Originally from the projects of the Bronx, New York, Ruiz later moved to Greenville, South Carolina, where he now resides. Nick built and lost a multi-million-dollar company by the age of 24, and he ended up facing bankruptcy, divorce, foreclosure, and repossession. He used the failure to develop a system for financial success, and Nick has been where you have been, and he can relate to every financial crisis that you're going through. And so this is what the book talks about. It's how to survive any financial crisis and the 9 steps that you need to know to be able to do that. Nick, I want to thank you for joining us today here on the program. I'm going to go ahead and give the website for the book once again, but thank you. You guys are doing a great job down there at Diggers. And
I really appreciate that.
And thanks for writing this book. I think it's going to be a tremendous help for people.
Thank you so much, Kevin.
Okay, that was Nick Ruiz. Again, he is down at Diggers Barbecue, and again, they're located down at 3217 Wade Hampton Boulevard. By the way, if you want to call them and find out more about down there, let me give you the number real quick. It's 244-2323. That's 244-2323. And you can find out about their hours of operation and all of those things. Just excellent. They have ribs down there, guys. And you've got to try some of their ribs. I'm sure they're going to love it. And again, the website that we were talking about is moneyandthe9steps.com. And again, the 9 in that title is the number 9. Let's go to our other interview now that we have set up. I want to talk about a brand new poll that was just done, a survey and a poll, and now a report, a paper that's been put out about contested curriculum and how teachers and citizens view civic education. And with me on the phone is Daniel. I'm going to mutilate your last name, Daniel, so I'm going to let you say it. Daniel, is it Lotzenheiser?
That's perfect, Kevin. Yeah, Daniel Lotzenheiser.
All right. Excellent. Daniel is a research assistant there for American Enterprise Institute. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. And so you work together with a number of the other folks there. Give us a brief overview, a summary of what this report was all about.
Sure. So this report is actually the first report was released back in September 2010. We sort of surveyed the scene and realized that in order to have sort of an accurate gauge of what the public thought about the quality of civics education in American high schools, what students should be knowing, how confident they were the students were knowing it, and compare that with teachers' views, you'd have to go back to 1998 for the last thorough study on that. So back in September, we released a report that looked at what public school and private school teachers thought about civics education in high schools. And then this one is a follow-up where we polled the public and then compared the public with the teachers.
Well, let's talk a little bit about those findings. Let's just make sure that – let me restate that just to make sure the listening audience knows what we're talking about. The difference in the opinion and the priorities that are set – on different civic information. Is that a correct way to place it? Between the way that the teachers, what they set as a priority, and the way that the American public in general would set as a priority. Is that correct?
That's fair.
Okay. So let's talk about what are those differences then, or what did your survey find in that report?
Sure. So we found a couple key areas where citizens and teachers disagreed as far as what they prioritize for citizenship education. We polled both groups on five broad priorities, mm-hmm. such things as teaching facts, instilling good work habits, understanding American government, promoting civic behaviors, and internalizing core values.
Mm-hmm.
And the public was twice as likely as teachers to rank teaching facts as one of the top two priorities, and about 1.5 times as likely to rank instilling good work habits as a top priority.
Mm-hmm.
And teachers, on the flip side, were over twice as likely as the public to rank promoting civic behaviors as a priority for civic education.
So the first thing is facts. You know, when I went to school, we had to memorize numerous facts over and over again, dates and facts, you know, just what happened and who was involved and these types of hard facts. You're saying now that the American people still believe in facts, but that there's not quite as strong of a view or an emphasis on these knowing these facts among teachers. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's probably fair. I think, it's important to state that, of course, they're competing priorities, and so when you have a limited class time, you're going to put the emphasis on various things. But as far as the item to know facts and key dates and whatnot, it is the case that citizens were considerably more likely to rank that as a high priority versus teachers.
Okay. And the second one that you noted there was just the involvement in civic duties. Is that what the second one was?
The one that teachers were more likely to rank as a top priority compared to the public was promoting civic behaviors.
Okay. And give us an example of what sort of civic behaviors are we talking about?
Sure. Those are things like voting and community service.
Okay. So voting and community service were high on their agenda. They felt that was a priority, but lesser so, when we compared it with facts, among American people in general, the American citizens.
That's right.
Okay. What else did the report find? Those are the two broad areas, right? As we drill down in those now, what other sort of findings come out of this report?
Sure. So one of the particularly interesting findings was we compared which items, we had 12 items, and compared how essential the public thought each item was. And they compared that with how confident they were the high school graduates had learned it. And we found a what we termed incongruence between the two. For example, the facts that the public was more inclined to view as very essential, they had less confidence that high school graduates had learned it. One example is about 70% of the public wanted graduates to leave having been able to identify the protections in the Bill of Rights, but only a third were confident that the high school graduates knew it. But the flip side is also true. The four issues that the public felt were the least essential were the same four issues that they were most confident that high school graduates were learning.
Mm-hmm.
These were all sort of behavioral kind of issues. For example, to develop the habits of community service, to be tolerant of different people and groups, to see themselves as global citizens living in an interconnected world.
Mm. It seems that there is a contrast here between one interested in facts and the other group interested in values. Is that a fair assessment?
I think that's probably fair. Mm-hmm.
So with the American people or the general citizen is more interested when they send the children to school, they want them to learn the facts, and maybe I could say add to that, then they'll take care of the values portion of it. And in the teacher is not so much concentrating on the bald facts, but talking about their values or the values associated with those things. They're putting their emphasis on those values.
I think that's right, and of course, the top priority of the public was actually to instill good work habits. So it seems the public, if we were to speak broadly, wants high school graduates to leave with sort of good work habits, such as being timely and hardworking and persistent, and then a sort of base level of facts about American government and history. And the teachers were more split. In some ways, this is understandable. I mean, teachers are going to be more confident in their ability to sort of teach such things as behaviors and values, and to do it in a non-biased manner. The public was a little more skeptical about that as well.
Mm. And we should point out that the report took into consideration both public and private schools compared with citizens. Is that correct?
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
So it's not we're not just going after the public school system or something. A lot of times the discrepancy between parents and public school was greater, but other times the parents or the citizens against private school, there was a greater discrepancy between those two groups. Is that correct?
That's right. There were differences with the citizens' views compared to both public and private.
Mm-hmm. So what else did this finding say? Or maybe we could talk about a couple of the items, the facts, types of facts that we're talking about. We're talking about like the location of 50 states, of the 50 states, or the dates of something like Pearl Harbor or something along that line. Is that what we're getting to?
That's right. So when we say So the areas that the public ranked as the most essential, again, we polled them on 12 different sort of broad items that might encompass what an individual would think of as civics education.
Mm-hmm.
And the sort of fact-based questions were to identify the protections in the Bill of Rights, like you said, to know facts like the 50 states and dates such as Pearl Harbor. Another one that the public ranked highly was to understand basic American government concepts like federalism and checks and balances, to understand economic principles like supply and demand, and then, of course, to have good work habits, to follow rules and be respectful of authority. Those all scored very high for the public.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have a percentage then associated with each one of those. For instance, the first one, to identify the protection guaranteed in the Bill of Rights, the public school listed it. It says first and second, and then citizen says second again. And underneath that, it says 83% in the first category, 81% and 69%. Just explain the way that the report is working.
Sure. So the percentages, if you look on the table, or the respondents that for both teachers and citizens that ranked the item essential. So we asked them if they thought it was absolutely essential, essential, or non-essential.
Mm-hmm.
And then just for comparison's sake, we went ahead and attached a ranking to it. So first, second, and third, and so forth. And so you can see that there are similarities.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I mean, the highest ranked item for public school teachers and the second highest for private school teachers and for citizens was to be able to identify protections in the Bill of Rights.
Yeah.
So that's encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
You do see some discrepancy. For example, it was tied for sixth for the public to know facts and dates, whereas it was the 11th or 12th for the teachers. That same one. So that's where you start to see some more of the differences.
Yeah, I was looking through, and I, you know, when you see numbers like this together, you know, immediately I look for the highs and the lows.
Mm-hmm.
To see what that tells us. And a couple of the lows were a little bit surprising to me. The low, it shows the ninth, I think, for the public schools was 50%, the ninth. Ninth selection out of the 12, I guess, but was to understand economic principles like supply and demand and the role of the market incentives. It's interesting to me just because this is the time period that we find ourselves in where the economy is so prevalent again. What's happening in the economy, it appears like it's going to be one of the major issues in the 2012 campaign. And, you know, yet it didn't rank very high. Understanding, you know, having a better understanding of that didn't rank very high. That leads me to say, do these fluctuate a little bit depending on what's currently taking place in our culture?
I'm sure they would. This is the first time we've done the study, and I think there are maybe tentative plans to do a follow-up around the 2012 elections. So I'm sure they would. I mean, most polling certainly fluctuates, just depending on what's kind of the important issues of the day.
Let me remind our listening audience, while I got a brief opportunity here to do so, that we're speaking with Daniel Lotzenheiser, and Daniel is with the American Enterprise Institute. He's a research fellow there, and he worked together with a couple of the other folks there from AIE in order to do a poll and a survey that they then produced a report, and some study papers came out of it. And it was entitled Contested Curriculum, How Teachers and Citizens View Civics Education. We don't hear much about this anymore today. In fact, the only time we do, I think there was just a report not that long ago, a news item, that talked about how poorly American students were doing in these areas. Unfortunately, that seems to be when we hear a lot about it. So it's very interesting, you know, for us to get a little bit of a snapshot here to find out why is this? Is this a priority with the teachers in the country? Is this a priority with the American people in general? Just where does this stand, and should it be more of a priority, I guess, is what we're getting to here at the end. Let me give you the website, by the way, for AIE, or the American Enterprise Institute. The full name is the American Enterprise Institute for Public Policy Research, and so they provide a lot of really good information like this. There's books out there, articles and commentary, speeches and testimonies, papers like we're looking at today, just a number of really helpful resources that they provide on a regular basis. Their website is www.aei.org. So that's .aei for American Enterprise Institute.org, and you can go out there and you'll see this contested curriculum paper that we're talking about here today with Daniel Lotzenheiser. Daniel, what else stuck out to you when you were thinking about this report? Are there some other lessons here that, you know, really we should sit up and take notice of?
Yeah, sure. So I think one particularly interesting observation that occurred both in this report and in the first one back in September is just the amount of weight that both teachers and the public place on instilling good work habits. Mm-hmm. And we term that transactional citizenship, and that's the idea that sort of places the premium on being hardworking, being timely and persistent. And it kind of views education as first and foremost as the gateway to professional and personal development.
Mm.
And while these attributes are certainly important, there is a difference between these skills, those kinds of skills necessary for advancement, and understanding basic facts about government or civic responsibilities. So it's hard to say exactly why that item scored so highly. It's quite possible that it's just no one wants to say it's not essential to teach those things.
Mm-hmm.
But we do want to point out that there is a difference between teaching good work habits, as important as they are, and teaching sort of basic facts about American government and history. And that's kind of an interesting thing to look at as we devise curriculums going forward.
So would AEI, would they be supporting the idea that we must teach the facts? We've got to start with that as a baseline, as a foundation, but we've got to move beyond that to actually have people use those facts to then get involved in their government. Is that a fair way of placing that?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Our conclusion when we try to look at some of the room for comparison is that, you know, the ideal curriculum for schools is to teach students sort of a basic knowledge about American government and to prepare them to be productive citizens.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can debate maybe where that bar should be placed as far as what are the kinds of facts that need to be taught. Like you mentioned earlier, I think it is clear from some of the recent reports out that we're probably falling short of most any sort of standard measure.
Mm-hmm. Is there any sort of discrepancy, or was this even considered in the study? What about political affiliation? Is there a difference between Democrats and Republicans in this issue?
There are, there are similarities and differences, and we broke that out in the report. Both parties scored very high on the work habits question. Republicans were more likely, though, to place a priority on teaching facts and understanding government, whereas on the flip side, Democrats were considerably more likely to place the emphasis on internalizing core values like tolerance and equality.
Mm-hmm. Any other, you mentioned that was part of the conclusion that was there. You gave me a little bit of a summary on the conclusion. Is there, what's the next step, I guess? You were saying that it's important, and I think that this is pretty much common knowledge in America that you would think it would be anyways, that we need to learn about our American citizenship and how we can be involved in our democracy. But how do we... what's the next step? How should people get involved? Should they be taking a report like this and taking it to their school board meetings, or what do you recommend that they do with this?
Sure. I mean, I think that's obviously certainly open for discussion. I think it's important to try to pressure and place some emphasis on improving performance when it comes to some of these basic facts and about American government and history. And that's probably best done with individuals, teachers, and the public at the local level.
Mm-hmm.
To be fair, you know, schools have a lot of pressure to boost performance across the board in math and science and a number of issues. So there's certainly competing priorities, but I think it is a fair statement to say that we are underperforming when it comes to sort of basic civics and American history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree, and I think that that recent news item, maybe I'll get a chance here to look it up again, but I think that recent news item that I heard quoted on a couple of news programs bears that out, that it was just woefully inept. People, you know, as they interviewed some of the young people, asked them basic questions that we all learned in school at least years ago, and now they seem to be completely oblivious to what the correct answers to those things are. So I think that certainly this would a report like this should help us to get a snapshot of what is taking place so that we can then make these suggestions to our local school boards and maybe in the private education as well, to even the folks that are involved in that. Well, Daniel, thank you very much for your work there at AIE and putting this together. And then thank you very much for taking some time out to visit with us here on the Knowing the Truth radio program. We appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Kevin.
Okay. That was Daniel Lotzenheiser, and we're talking about the report that he participated in. It's known as the Contested Curriculum Report, and the subtitle of it is How Teachers and Citizens View Civics Education. I noticed when I looked out on the web here, too, at least on this page, is actually entitled the AIE Program on American Citizenship. So they have a whole segment of the website that seems to be dedicated to this. And as I was looking through, I noticed that there was actually a segment here where Daniel and I think Cheryl Miller, and maybe even Andrew Kelly as well, that worked on this report, that they participated in a video. So you can actually watch them on a video giving the presentation of what was taking place. I think it was actually just Daniel and Cheryl on the video. But you can go out there to the American Enterprise Institute website to find out more. And again, that website is www.aei.org. And so if you go out there, you'll be able to find out a lot more about what we were talking about and read the report for yourself. We just gave a little bit of some of the highlights here on the program today, but really the report, it spells it out more clearly for you, and so you can go through there and see it relatively quickly. I wanted to let you know about tomorrow's broadcast. I think we've had some pretty interesting interviews the last couple of weeks here, especially we had Trevin Wax on, we had Mike McKinley on from Nine Marks Ministry. I had Derek Thomas on last week. We were talking about the greatest chapter in all the Bible, and certainly that was an interesting discussion. I had Rick Holland on yesterday. We talked about uneclipsing the sun. Rick is actually the executive pastor at Grace Community Church. He's actually just leaving there to take a position in Kansas as another church. But he's worked for years with John MacArthur and the wonderful ministry there at Grace Community Church in California. And now tomorrow we're actually going to have another good broadcast on, and this will be with Wendy Elsup is going to be my guest. She's been on with me before. But we're going to be talking about the book of Ephesians, and we're going to be talking about it specifically from a woman's perspective. Wendy's going to be talking about women finding their identity through the doctrine of Christ and the benefits of Christ that are given to us in the book of Ephesians. It's going to be an interesting study. We'll be looking at this to see what Ephesians, we've got an outline we're working with there. We're going to outline the book and then talk about how this will help women and their identity. Join us tomorrow. Remember, the Lord Jesus Christ said this. He said that you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.
Life-changing teaching and talk for the Carolinas and Georgia. Christian Talk 660, WLFJ, Greenville, Spartanburg, Anderson.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lisa.